Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Radzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Kim Smith, founder and CEO of Learner Studio, an organization sparking the change needed to reinvent American education and ensure that every young person can flourish in the age of artificial intelligence. Kim, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, we're so glad to have you here, Kim. So you rightly and understandably believe that we need to reinvent education to ensure that our young people will flourish in this age of AI. And I admit, with my parent hat on, I try and figure out, what is this age of AI? What exactly are we talking about? So can you give us some insight? What distinguishes the age of AI from any past historical eras? And in what ways does education need to be reinvented right now?
This isn't just another tech trend that we've seen, like the internet or cell phones. This shift is really a once in a century kind of shift, a little more akin to the printing press than the internet. And it's changing everything in a way that's really hard to keep up with. So I appreciate that question as a parent. At the education level, what I'd say is AI requires that we fundamentally rethink education, not just how we're delivering it and how young people are learning, but what our kids need to be learning to thrive in that future. From what I see, we need to think about not just how AI can make the process more efficient, but what is the destination? What is the knowledge and the skills that young people need to be inspired and prepared to thrive in this new context that AI is shaping?
Kim, Learner Studio's website poses some big questions, perhaps none bigger than the central question that motivates your team. And I quote, "What do young people need to be inspired and prepared to flourish in the age of AI, as individuals, in careers, and for democracy?" So let's start with young people as individuals. Can you talk about some of those specific core AI competencies that we need to help our young people develop?
There's a couple ways we could slice what young people need as individuals, and in particular, how that's shifting in the age of AI. So part of it has to do with the developmental psychology. You've had a number of guests who've talked about what young people and teenagers need, the connection, the purpose, the ability to have mastery over skills and content. They still need all those things. And they need those things in this moment where AI is changing which pieces of that become most important. So here's an example. In the past, we might have assumed that young people's ability to connect with other human beings was a no-brainer, that that would just happen. Right now, as AI is bringing more tools like companion bots, and young people are turning to those companion bots for advice, connection, some of them are even calling themselves therapy bots, there's a way that is creating new challenges for young people to just even understand how to form and sustain human relationships and human connections. So some of them have to do with that deeply human connect to other humans. And some of it has to do with the ability to make choices in your life and how you think about your path forward and your meaning, your purpose, who you are, and how do we think about helping young people as individuals to have skills around the agency and the path creation that's in front of them in this age of AI.
All right, Kim, that sounded like a lot. And I'm thinking about our students, I'm thinking about my own kids, and ideally someday they are gainfully employed and they're navigating opportunities ahead of them. This age of AI has massive implications for the future of our workforce. So how are we going to best help our young people navigate these shifting economic landscapes?
Yeah, there's a number of dimensions to that. One of it is around the navigation part. How do we help them have the skills they need to navigate the learning they need for careers as they change? And in particular, AI is changing what we think of as the career ladder. So it's less predictable. There isn't kind of a way to jump on a treadmill and come off the other side and be ready for a sustainable kind of steady career right now. So how do they have the metacognitive skills they need to reflect on what they've learned and what they know and what their strengths are in the career world and what the next cycle of their learning needs to look like? So a lot of it has to do with the cycle of learning. Of course, there's a lot of overlap in the durable skills you need in a career and what you need at the individual level. So how do you form good relationships? Can you collaborate? Can you work on a team? How do you think about problem solving matters a lot in the career sphere as well. We also need to think about actual AI literacy skills and how to use AI and data literacy as tools. So it's a shift in the way you think about navigational skills in the career, the shift from more technical to more human skills. And then there's some overlap again with what you want to develop as a human in this moment around human connection and collaboration, et cetera.
And Kim, so we've talked about kids at the individual level. We've talked about the career level. The other part of that big question we asked at the beginning was about the social level, about democracy. Can you talk about the ways in which some of the things we're discussing, AI and the need to reinvent American education, can or might impact the very idea of our nation and its politics?
Yeah, we're living in a time, as you know, that's quite polarized. And we have found ourselves in a moment where the muscle strength you need to be engaged in dialogue across difference and to do what I think of as perspective taking, to kind of understand your own values and then pay attention to how other people with different perspectives might be thinking about an issue. I think of those as kind of muscles we need to use for democracy. And we're not investing in opportunities for young people to practice and try out those muscles and strengthen those muscles. So there's an overlap in the specific competencies you need for democracy and careers and as healthy individuals. But there's a way that you practice the democracy part of those skills or the common good part of it with other people. That can be in the school, but that can be in the community outside of the school building as well. And we need to think about how can we re-engineer the system or reinvent the system to give young people the opportunity to practice those skills? There's another piece of the focal question we have around to be inspired as well, to be inspired and prepared. It's particularly relevant in democracy because we're starting to see data that young people and teens maybe aren't as clear about why democracy matters and why it's important to problem solve together. They see the big problems, climate crisis, pandemics, even this polarization. This democracy sphere, this community engagement sphere, civics, is a place they can do that if we design the system in a way that inspires them to want to and then gives them the chance to practice those skills together.
So Kim, let's talk about that system because it's more than a safe bet to say that some of the familiar and comfortable schooling structures that we've had in place for a long time need to make space for some new ones. So what's an example of an old schooling structure whose usefulness may be on its way out? And what's an example of a new future-driven schooling structure that could take its place?
Maybe the easiest one to identify is the way we have traditionally used seat time as a way to think about whether a young person has invested the energy in mastering a subject, right? Did you show up in class? It relates similarly to a rigid calendar and schedules and learning only in the classroom. So there's like a set of things that work together that all I think need to change. You can't really take one of the building blocks out by itself. You sort of have to address how seat time and the rigid calendar and the learning only in a classroom in an age-based cohort with the teacher in the front of the room, like that whole puzzle of all those pieces put together has to be replaced with a system that's more flexible, provides the opportunity for personalized pathways, this mastery progression we've talked about to show you've actually mastered skills and to create those opportunities for that inspiring practice of those skills, to care, to see that what you're doing matters, to have relationships with educators that are different, whether it's a peer mentor or educator playing different kinds of roles around coaching or navigation, as well as sometimes content instruction. But increasingly, AI and technology is going to make the didactic content delivery less experientially relevant to young people. And we need to focus the educator role on more of the human skills development we've been talking about. So that was like a bundle of them and not one, but it's because it's hard to kind of peel one of those pieces away. You kind of have to think of them as a whole bundle that fit together. Does that make sense?
It does. This is Greg Baer here with Ryan Rudzewski, and we're talking with Kim Smith, CEO of Learner Studio.
Kim, before you founded Learner Studio, you have founded and led all sorts of other organizations. Bellwether, New Schools Venture Fund. You were even part of the team that founded Teach for America. And when you think about all these different career stages, all these different organizations, are there through lines that have motivated your work and tied your professional journey together?
There have been a couple through lines. One is at the center of all of those things is this belief in human ingenuity as a resource for progress. And as I think about human ingenuity, it's part of why I tend to be supporting entrepreneurs and innovators and to create spaces where people can work together. One piece related to that is I've always tried to figure out ways to find good people who are really interested in human ingenuity as a way to collaborate toward making the world better and to give them space to do that and to help them to reinforce for each other that sort of inspiring focus on the good, feed the good wolf energy matters, and to be able to reinforce and support each other. And then in the course of doing that, I'd say the other thing that stands out to me is asking questions in a way that can help people to bridge things that seemed like it needed to be an either or, but really could be a both and. So that would be things like human and technology, or working across ideological divides, or thinking about, you know, liberty and justice in the democratic realm. And how do we help people bridge what seem to be differences that are keeping them apart so that they can create more powerful solutions to make the world better?
Kim, I love the way you described your through lines and that core concept of human ingenuity, because you have long found ways to find good people, to give them the time and space so that they can do what they are designed and want to do on this planet and to do it together. And so we're curious, can you tell us about some of the people, the organizations, maybe even some of the schools that the rest of us should know about because they're inspiring you right now?
We have a number of really terrific partners that we're supporting on the school models front. So thinking about how you might enable learner agency and flexibility. We're working with the Forest School down in Atlanta, with One Stone in Idaho, with the Big Picture Network that has a new international Big Picture learning credential, which I think is exciting. On the individual thriving front and how the age of AI is affecting that, this is a moment. This is like a cathedral building moment where we need to lean into the values we want to be designing around. And so some new organizations have emerged. So one of those is the Rhythm Project that's really focusing on human connection in the age of AI for young people. Another one is an organization called PlayLab that is trying to create kind of a public utility that invites educators and young people to become creators in the age of AI, to create tools rather than to just think of ways of using tools that others are presenting to them. Up to this point, most of the tools folks have been creating and using have really been focused on how to make the traditional system that's very efficiency-based more efficient. Grade books, recommending engines, tutor bots, all of which can matter. But there is an opportunity to really rethink how AI can reshape and help us do the reinvention we were just talking about. And so we're excited that tools like PlayLab that have been to date mostly efficiency tools are now turning the corner to work with lab schools and folks thinking about really re-engineering things. And some of the schools we're working with, like Building 21, are stepping back to think about how might that change the way they approach their mastery-based model if they were building now in this moment. On the infrastructure front, I just want to make sure to put a little plug in for infrastructure because it's often overlooked. We're supporting Learning Economy Foundation to think about how might there be a backbone where young people could plug in stackable credentials, micro-credentials, badges, that sort of thing, to show the skills they've mastered and the content they've mastered across a number of learning sites. My parents were active in the 4-H. I live in a community that's active with 4-H. A lot of young people who participate in 4-H currently aren't getting academic credit for that. You all at Remake are doing amazing things learning in the community, and often those young people are not getting credits for that work. But what if they could and could plug them into this Learning Economy Foundation to show what they've been doing? So there's some of that infrastructure. And then lastly, I'd say on the democracy front, we have two different efforts worth highlighting. One is some work that History CoLab is doing on a project to kind of redefine what civic thriving means in a kind of bipartisan way, and how might that shape the way we think about civic thriving and civic learning and active engagement. And we've done some summer pilots trying to combine the active learning, near-peer educators, different roles for educators with local civics, city year, vocal justice, trouble and co., and a number of other organizations to bring together AI and data science literacy with community-based projects and problem solving. So trying to tackle the skills around data science and AI literacy and the inspired part around collective problem solving. I guess I would just summarize by saying it is a moment where I think people are really waking up to the need to think differently about leaning in to shape the age of AI and how our learning systems help young people be inspired and prepared to thrive. And we're excited to be collaborating and partnering with a lot of them.
That list is overwhelming. Overwhelming in a great way, because it just reminds you there are so many good people doing good work, trying to tackle this moment in the right ways. And also overwhelming because, it's just an enormous task. And one that's made all the more overwhelming as we collectively navigate so much technological, economic, and political change. So I can't help but ask, on a personal level, how do you avoid getting bogged down in the enormity of the tasks that lie ahead and keep yourself engaged in this work of reimagining what's possible?
In addition to the work I do in education, I'm a parent and I have two teenage daughters. And part of what keeps me motivated and focused is realizing they need us. They need all of us who have been thinking about education and learning to lean into this moment and be partners with them to define a positive future. I think we're at a really big choice moment right now, and there are a lot of forces aligned to steer us toward darkness and division and polarization, whether it's through social media and algorithms. And someone talked about a phrase called algorithmic fatalism. And it's just when folks assume, let's be fatalistic about it turning toward the dark side and turning toward the less positive future. And what keeps me motivated, it's not that it's never overwhelming. There's a lot to do, as you said. But what keeps me motivated is our young people are optimistic about their future and want to live in a positive future and need us as partners in envisioning what that could be. And I do think AI presents the opportunity for some really positive changes if we lean into being active about grounding them in the values we care about. We often forget to add the values component to this. Our young people need skills in ethics and moral character and the pieces of the values framework that are more relevant than ever as the age of AI evolves. And I think about my two daughters, and as one positive example, when they picked high schools, one picked a high school that leaned toward belonging and less toward kind of academic rigor, and one picked a high school that leaned heavily toward academic rigor and wasn't so great at the belonging part. We have an opportunity to get to the both and of those two pieces that both matter. And we all know how much both of those things matter for young people, the identity, the belonging, and the academic rigor and thinking and the skills. Like, they can both happen, and AI can help us make sure they both happen in a way we haven't been as able to do in the past. There is an opportunity for this to go better if people who are positive and good and want to help create a more positive future lean in together to create it and not to step back out of overwhelm. And we've seen through what happened with social media and other moments, like, we can't trust the market to define the future that we want for our young people.
Kim, are there things that you do to keep yourself grounded in the positive, or at least in the possibility of the positive?
Well, one piece, as you guys highlighted a minute ago, is to be really clear about how amazing the innovators and entrepreneurs are who are leaning into this creation of a positive future. So part of it is to stay in touch with our Learner Studio colleagues and partners in the network and the various entrepreneurs we're supporting. That's a piece of it. One way to keep all of us motivated and moving forward is to connect with each other and to see that there are other people working on this and to realize when we collaborate, we're stronger and we have even better answers. Human ingenuity is an incredible engine, and collaborative human ingenuity is miraculous.
Kim, we want to bring our conversation to a close today by just asking some human questions. So give us an answer, the first thing that comes to mind as we ask these questions. Are you ready to play along?
Sure.
You, Kim, are a longtime resident of Northern California. What's something about that part of the country that might surprise us?
I live in the North Bay, and it might surprise you to know that in my particular community, it is politically and ideologically diverse, which is not true of a lot of California.
You are an educator and a learner. What's something you've learned recently from your teenage daughters?
You know, this is going to be deep. Sorry, it's not the Demon Hunters, but I had dropped my older daughter off at college, and my younger daughter, who's 17, was reacting to me having difficulty letting go. And she said, I think what's happening is you're in a grief cycle for our little family unit because it's changing and you have to like work your way through these stages and get to acceptance. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is a 17-year-old who like is recognizing a deep emotional phenomenon that's happening and is offering assistance. And it just reminded me what we all know to be true, which is particularly with teenagers, there is this like reciprocal mentoring and learning that's happening all the time. And we tend to focus on it as if it's kind of older person to younger person, but it's just not true, as you guys know. And so it was just a blinding moment of realizing, holy cow, that was deep and true and super helpful. And wow, I am learning from my 17-year-old in ways that are deeply meaningful.
I love that. And before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
One thing we as parents need to recognize is kind of a corollary to what I just shared. We have things to offer and we have things to learn from young people. And related to that, as we move into rethinking how we organize learning and education systems, we need to trust young people with more agency. If we want them to be more engaged, and if we want more of the curiosity-driven learning and the problem-solving, we need to trust our young people to have agency and to make choices and to know there will be some mistakes along the way. So don't abdicate and walk away, but be engaged together in that messiness of learning and making choices, which can sometimes be uncomfortable.
Thank you so much to Kim Smith, CEO of Learner Studio. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.